Have you classified any documents lately? The Information Security Oversight Office at the National Archives and Records Administration just released its annual classification report to the president. It examines government agency security classification activities, shares cost estimates for those activities, and provides an update on the Controlled Unclassified Information Program. John Fitzpatrick is director of the Information Security Oversight Office at NARA and joins me now with an update. Mr. Fitzpatrick, great to have you on.
Thanks. Thanks for having me back.
All right. So what is the basic report saying this year? It looks like classification activities are down quite a bit.
Yes, Tom, there's, I'll say, good news and downward trends in a couple of areas in the report. ICE has been reporting on classification activity for really 36 years. It's got a long track record in characterizing the nature of classification activity, and that changes, waxes and wanes a little bit over time. And it's also influenced by what's going on in the world and what the needs for classification have been. The trend over time is upward in classification. Post 9/11, the expansion of classified networks have put classified information in a lot more places, and it's important that it's done so. And that's led to an overall rise. But in the last couple of years, we've seen the measures that we use temper that a bit and show a bit of a contraction. There are two primary measures that we use to characterize classification activity, what we call original classification. These are new secrets. There are specially designated officials in government who have the authority from the president to create a new secret, to say some information for the first time may be classified. Most people with a security clearance don't perform that kind of classification. They classify things that are in classification guides that say this is to be handled at this kind of information is to be handled at the secret level or at the top secret level. Someone has made the decision about that. That's called derivative classification. So original classification, we've seen a trend downward in the last 5 years, and we are a 20% reduction in the last year. 46,000 decisions is a pretty low number. Derivative classification is the bulk of classification. That number is down 3% and at about 77 million decisions. So you can see a big difference in scale there.
It sounds like there must be some automatic process for those decisions in order to have 78 million of them in a given year.
Right. So this is the day-to-day business of people that handle classified information. And much of this is also now on classified networks and done in email. So if you can imagine the way anybody writes email, they send it to a group, the group comments on it and sends it back. Each one of those emails and responses becomes countable in this system. And so the nature of having and counting email has actually shown a big spike in the numbers. There was a period of time before email was before email was practiced and then before it was collected in these numbers. And if you look back about 10 years ago, you'll see sort of a big spike. That's when we started to count email. And that's had a significant impact in understanding how much classified information is in use. It's not necessarily a bad thing. It's a reflection also of information sharing. There are more users of those networks, obviously for homeland security and counterterrorism reasons, out in state and local and tribal law enforcement arrangements. So that's a good thing for the security of the nation, but it does give the opportunity for more classified to be created and shared.
And so when speaking of a document, the word document is for something to be decided on to be classified or not. It could be a paper document, but it seems more and more often it could be even an email. Would that be considered a document?
Yes. So an email, a web page. We don't have classified tweets out on Twitter. But there are...
At least none you know about.
None that we know about. That is correct. But there are such platforms on the classified networks, similar things. And so each one of those becomes countable. And so we struggle to adapt what's the appropriate performance measure. And does it matter if we've got these things? They're not new secrets necessarily. They're new channels for existing information. By and large, information sharing in that context is a good thing. It's the line between whether something should be secret or not that is the one that's most important for us to walk.
Now, I recall a few years ago there was an effort to reduce the number of classification levels to simplify the whole thing. What is the progress on that, and has that made it easier or more difficult to decide?
Yeah, so I think you're perhaps referring to a recommendation that was made by a board that's also affiliated with my office. The Public Interest Declassification Board has made a number of recommendations about the classification system at large. Those are the kinds of recommendations that are made and eventually find their way into changes in executive orders. The system for classification is a presidential system. Each presidential administration puts its stamp on it by revising the executive order and giving the instructions to government as to how classified is to be used. That particular recommendation is a very difficult one. And has what we found in the follow-up to that, making that recommendation, is that by and large agencies do live in a two-tier classification system. However, there are some agencies that primarily deal with confidential and secret information, and there are other agencies that primarily deal with secret and top secret. So yes, they're dealing with primarily two levels of classification, but across government, the use, the utility in changing to that system wasn't found to be worth the effort.
We're speaking with John Fitzpatrick. He's director of the Information Security Oversight Office at the National Archives and Records Administration. And the other thing you report on is documents that have been declassified.
Yes.
And that's an ongoing effort because almost everything ever published by the government, I guess, is subject to this. And what were the basic numbers in the latest year for which you're reporting? And then I want to ask you about the time period under which something can be declassified. But first, give us the picture of how much was declassified.
Certainly. So the declassification requirement comes from that executive order, and agencies have a number of different ways to look at the collections of documents, basically on how old they are and what kinds of collections they fall into. They have different time frames under which they need to be examined, and these are referred to as either automatic or systematic or discretionary classification. So the arcana of it slices the numbers up a bit. But if you add all of those up, agencies reviewed 64 million pages last year for declassification. They declassified about 28 million of those and made decisions about the others to either declassify in part or to exempt them at this point in time and consider them later for declassification. There's an important tenet in the executive order that President Obama's changes to the EO made, which is that no information may be, it's explicit in the executive order now, that no information may be considered classifiable indefinitely. And so at some point in a document or a records life cycle, it will be considered for declassification and eventually will be declassified.
And do you have any idea of the average age of those which are declassified, if that's even a meaningful number?
So that's perhaps not the most meaningful number, but the executive order lays out a 25-year declassification expectation. There's a provision for agencies to mark documents and indicate that this document is, every document that's marked needs to be indicated for when it is declassifiable. And there's a good number that are declassifiable in 10 years. There's a back-end requirement that they be considered for declassification at 25 years. And then if you're going to keep it classified after 25 years, you can only do so if you've been granted that authority in a presidential mechanism that gives exemptions. And so there are controls on the amount of information that's classified and the amount of time it can be classified. There's also a provision for members of the public who are interested in topics to request records to be reviewed for declassification regardless of their age. And this is a very common program used in research and journalism. If an individual becomes aware of a specific document that an agency created, they can ask for that document to undergo mandatory declassification review. And in fact, that happened. Nearly 600,000 pages were reviewed under those kinds of requests, and 372,000 of those pages were declassified.
And how old is the oldest page that is still classified? Do we know that one?
Well, you have to. So theoretically, that's got to be from 1940 or 1941. The first classification under presidential authority came in the Roosevelt administration. And so while there are, I'm sure, records you could find that bear markings from earlier than that, I'll say under the current program, you can go back that far. And there are some, there is a provision in the executive order for things to be considered classifiable, even though they might be 75 years old or older. There's a very narrow window that for that authority. A panel that we administer here at ISOO executes those things. The best example for that kind of thing would be protections in place at Fort Knox. Fort Knox is that old. It was built then. The physical characteristics aren't going to change, and they're essential to the protection. And so you can see that a secret like that, certain secrets about the protection of the White House itself, the White House complex, those kinds of things are exempted that long. But by and large, it's very difficult to keep something classified that long.
And did anything come up from classification this year that was really exciting that they ran into you and said, hey, John, you got to read this one?
Well, that happens regularly. I mean, we are here at the National Archives. It doesn't have to be a classified document for records of the nation's history to come to light and to be fascinating for the role that they played in some particular piece of history. And so often the storyline of a historical event can be improved by declassifying some material. But we regularly see material of interest just when you look at the way in the pre-email era. Meetings at the White House, for example, were often recorded in a stenographic way. And so you can read through and see the names and statements made as if it was a court transcript in memos of conversation. And those are all fascinating. And it's a great reason to come to the archives and read what's here.
Some pretty salty language, I'll bet, in some of those transcripts.
So they are unexpurgated. They show the character and of the conversations and of the individuals in them. It's unvarnished.
All right, John Fitzpatrick is Director of the Information Security Oversight Office at the National Archives and Records Administration. Thanks so much for joining me.
It's a pleasure. Thanks, Tom.